Well, here we go again, all you coasties. Or for those of you in about 60% of the U.S. this weekend, all you toasty coasties. It's hot out. Or in Canada, I guess I would make them tasty toasty coasties. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah, here we go again. And thank you, everybody, for all the kind email. Let's just name this, shall we? Art Bell has retired again after a great show last weekend, which we replayed for Coast to Coast Live tonight. And when I say Art Bell has retired again, that's not dissing the granddaddy of C2C, but I was trying to count the various times he's left and how many times I've had the pleasure of being a part of that period or for his return. I missed the first one, was around for the second one and got to make the announcement that he was coming back, missed the third one. I was back for the mini retirement when Art cut down to once a week to travel with Ramona. That's when I came back. And then for Art's comeback to the two weekend shows and now this retirement from broadcasting altogether, does this count as four or five? I'm not sure. Doesn't matter. A million of you wrote to ask, is this one for real or for good? And I ask you, does it matter? Not to me. Like many of you, it seems, I have had many jobs in my life. I am a husband, a father, a demented choir boy, a daily morning show host, and a guy who professionally keeps the chair warm for Art Bell. It seems that I may be called upon to fulfill that duty one more time, and I'm okay with that. I'm like those aspiring actors they hired to sit in the stars' seats at the Oscars. It's just one of my jobs in life, coast-to-coast seat filler. But one more time, for the third time, it's Coast to Coast AM with Ian Punnett, and I couldn't be more excited about it. Every Saturday night, to infinity and beyond. Art has always been good and fair with me. He's entering into a new personal phase in his life, and he really wants to savor and enjoy it, and I wish him happy trails on the journey there. And maybe on the journey back, because that's how it's always been. Art leaves, and the team pulls together. Art comes back, and the team makes room. And I'm just proud to still be on the team after all these years, still growing, still learning, still doing my part to keep Coast to Coast AM on course, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go to my first break on time. In just a minute. Before I do, I just want to add that George Noory continues to be one of the best colleagues in the business. It takes a big man to be so gracious. And I also want to thank all of you for making Coast to Coast Live, often referred to as the early show, such a runaway success and giving me this opportunity again to do Coast to Coast AM. I hope to bring that same sense of innovation and excitement to Coast to Coast AM that we brought to Coast Live. What's the future of that? I'm not sure. Still, it's hard to let go. Thank you, Lisa, Trevor, Dan, Nikki, Steve, Gina, Aaron, Stephanie, Kiris, Julie, all the people in affiliate relations, sales, Lex, Sean, and especially Craig Kitchen for both the opportunity to do Coast to Coast Live and the tools to win with it. Craig Kitchen, I hate to see you go too, but I sure respect your reasons why. It's a decision I've made for my family more than once, and I've never regretted it. I spent a little time on the fan sites this week. I often do. From the veteran C2C watchers at Fantastic Forum, to the newer sites like ctcamfan.com. Sometimes the speculation on the web about what happens behind the scenes is entertaining but uninformed. And in your case, Craig, it's been way off base. You've been a huge part of our success as a show and a team. And thank you for being our unsung Mr. X. I'm excited for the future of the weekends. And I think everybody on the phones and in the chat rooms are going to really enjoy what we've got coming up over the months ahead, starting tonight with Jim Mars next hour and Andrew Keene in his polemic against the internet in just a few minutes. But despite the internet, surprisingly, news travels slow sometimes. And some people are tuning in right now, and they're just figuring out that Art Bell has retired again, and perhaps from broadcasting for good. It's always been a challenge to carry on in his place in this show, because, as I've said before, it's George Noory's name on the door, but it's Art Bell's painting over the mantle. And once more, I have the opportunity to walk the candlelit halls of the coast-to-coast haunted mansion once a week, loving every minute of it, hoping I get a chance to do it forever. But just in case, as always, Art, I'll leave a key under the welcome mat for you. Andrew Keene is not just an author, he is an internet entrepreneur in his own right, which perhaps makes it ironic that he's written the book The Cult of the Amateur: How Today's Internet is Killing Our Culture. I finished reading your book over vacation. I took a couple of days off this week, and I finished reading it and enjoyed it quite a bit, Andrew. Although I don't know in the end that I agree, I find your argument compelling, and I thought everybody here on Coast to Coast would enjoy it too, because you don't meet many people under the age of 70 that hate the internet.
Right, thank you. And I'm fortunately a little less than 70 years old.
But it's interesting because you had early internet business success, not perhaps as big as some of the, you know, the Googles or the YouTubes, but you had early success, and yet you've become sort of, if you pardon the expression, sort of keenly aware of what you think the internet is doing to dismantle our culture.
Yeah. Well, think of it. Think of the internet today as a little like an extended version of a 60s commune, in which all authority is being rejected and undermined, and everybody says that there no longer is authority. That's my problem with today's internet. The fundamental challenge to authority, authority in terms of expertise, authority in terms of moral codes, authority in terms of the wisdom of real people as opposed to the wisdom of crowds. So I'm particularly concerned about the way in which today's internet is undermining our traditional forms of authority.
Let me start there and ask you, why do we need authority? Why is it that you feel we need to have any authority on the internet?
Because I think that human societies throughout history have required degrees of authority. We need experts, we need professionals, whether they are experts in terms of collecting knowledge, experts in terms of creating entertainment, experts in terms of establishing moral codes. Otherwise, the thing turns into complete anarchy, which is what the internet is today when you think of something like Wikipedia, in which anyone can edit the thing, and you have the authority of a 14-year-old kid being treated in the same way as the authority of a Harvard professor. So if you're an anarchist, if you reject all forms of authority, if you want to live on a commune, then the internet's a great place. But I think for the majority of regular people, it's very troubling. And that's what I'm really uncovering in my book.
I want to give out I'm going to give out some phone numbers at the bottom of the hour, and I want people to join in this conversation on the need for the internet to have authority and how we would even begin to try to determine who the authorities would be. I mean, in a way, I read your book, and I was, you know, you don't, like I said, you don't read often people slamming the internet like this, and I mean, fair is fair. I mean, I think you do it really well. You articulate the argument, you know, in great detail. But as I'm reading it, I think in the end, I think you're just by chapter after chapter of what the internet does wrong and how it's killing us. I expect you at the end to say, I think the internet should be disbanded. I think the internet should be dismantled. It seems to me that's the conclusion you reach. But in the end, you just say, well, we need more authority on the internet. And I don't even begin to know how you come up with authority.
Well, I'm interested in your response as a professional journalist. Look, you have authority. And you may have call-in people, but you have a training. I mean, you've obviously been through a lot. I listened to your introduction to this show. You spent years acquiring your skills and developing them. Nobody could do your work. The premise of the internet is anyone could be Ian, or anyone could be Andrew Keen, which I think is unacceptable. In response to your question, I've got tons of critics on the internet. 50% of them are calling me a fascist, and 50% of them are calling me a Stalinist. But the reality is that even if I wanted to, which I don't, I'm not against technology. I love the internet. I'm on it all the time. I've got 4 computers of my own. I've made my business through it. Even if I wanted to close it down, which I don't, it's entirely unrealistic and absurd. We've got to live with this thing. We've got to shape it in the way that benefits society. The thing that I want to make clear in the book is that the internet is a mirror. When we look at it, we're looking at ourselves. And when we see things we don't like, we can't just smash the mirror or turn away. We've got to try and improve what we look like. And I think that's the premise of the book, is that we create technology, we shape it, and we need to make an internet that is much, much worthier in terms of the human condition, much more moral, much more authoritative, much more reliable, and above all else, much more educational for the kids. Because I wrote this as a parent. You know, I've got 2 young kids. I've got a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old. And it's that generation that is being profoundly shaped by the internet.
All right.
What really troubles me is if you have this media without any authority, without professional journalists, without professional entertainers and broadcasters like yourself, what kind of world are these kids going to grow up in? They are growing up to become media illiterate, and we need media literacy if we're going to have a civilized society.
Well, see, and I would say that, I mean, as kind as your description was of me, I'm not, although I have served the role in the past of being a professional journalist, I have done that. My role on the show is not that, and it's not as an authority, but it's as a guide. And it's a guide who often sees that other people who are in the group that I'm guiding may have better advice on where we should go than I do.
But you're skilled in that, and you've acquired those skills over the years. Those skills have been, I mean, you're obviously naturally talented, but nobody could just come on the radio and do what you do.
Well, I see, and I would think in a lot of ways, people who are honestly in touch with kind of being in the moment, they might find that what I do is really not all that hard. It's just a matter of training yourself in a way to not overthink it. You know, it's just to kind of let it happen, to kind of let
it look. I mean, the good people make it look easy. It's like sportsmen, right?
But I go back to what you're saying. I don't, and this is where I want to see where the phones go with this. And I appreciate what you're talking about, morality and other things. But I would tell you that I just don't see how anybody could ever, how could there ever be an authority on the internet? And in the past, say, 40 years of professional news coverage, don't we know now very clearly that the people who were often the authorities were abusers of that authority, and they edited things to their particular political liking, which in the end, we kind of look back on and say, gosh, I wish they'd trusted us with more of the truth instead of shaping it for us and spoon-feeding it to us on the presumption that we couldn't handle it.
See, I disagree with that strongly. I mean, I know that there are lots of examples of corrupt journalists. I mean, Judy Miller obviously comes to mind on the New York Times, Jason Blair. But I think the majority of journalists do a pretty good job, and they're fair in terms of providing us with news. And that comes back to the issue of authority. There are sites now on the internet like Reddit, which provide, or Dig, which provide the reader with the so-called wisdom of the crowd news. So you read increasingly inane, dumbed-down information. I prefer to have a newspaper or a television or radio service where professional editors select what they consider to be the important news, edit it properly, and then put it in front of people. I think that that's infinitely preferable to the chaos on the internet, to the blogosphere, where nobody knows where anything's coming from, and where half the content's probably corrupt because it's being authored by anonymous people.
Well, I'll grant you that. And there certainly is a lot of anonymous poaching that goes on the internet that people do for their own amusement, and they don't care about the truth, and they're not particularly interested in anything other than pulling a good prank, you know, on the and you
Well,
know.
but not only pranks. I mean, it's, you know, people pretending to be working for Hillary Clinton and putting out anti-Hillary ads on YouTube and every, you know, the same with McCain and Obama and everybody else.
Well, okay, but is that not any? I mean, well, let me back up for a second. I go back to what I said about journalists of the past. Let's just say, in the 19 under the in the Kennedy administration, a lot of journalists knew that the president of the United States was sleeping with women that were also the girlfriends of mobsters. And they kept it to themselves. They thought the country doesn't need to know this. And you look back on it now and you think, what under what authority, what moral authority did they have to hold that information away from the American public other than just kind of a good old boys club?
Yeah, but there's another way of looking at it. I mean, look at FDR and the way in which the media refused to make a big deal of the fact that he was handicapped. I mean, every media works within a certain etiquette, with certain ethics. And I don't agree. I mean, I think you're right about JFK, but I don't think that the media was doing it because it wanted to keep that knowledge away from the public. I think it was much less comfortable with exposing the sex lives of presidents back in the early 60s.
Okay, I'll grant you that, but I think that again we go back to the motives of the moral authority and how do we begin to establish when we look back at some of the excesses. I'll give you an example. A lot of people in, say, the New York Times of the 1950s were very aware of the kind of excesses that were going on in the Soviet Union, and they decided for, in the cases of many prominent people, to not report that because they thought it was going to feed something which they didn't want to see fed in the United States. Well, okay, so that fit to their kind of cocktail crowd culture, but is that really fair journalism to say this is even going on in our country? Now they won't even report something that's going on into in another country because they're afraid of how it might move the needle politically in the US.
I think that media literacy is predicated on people knowing that newspapers are not perfect, like people aren't perfect. And the New York Times, for example, tends to be more liberal, probably more pro-Israel, more internationalist, whereas the Wall Street Journal is more conservative, more pro-business. And I think it's the responsibility of readers to actually get to know their newspapers quite intimately, and ideally to read, say, both the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and get both sides of many issues. I mean, what you're saying has a degree of truth. No newspaper, no media is ever perfect. But what's the alternative? And that you can see the alternative out there today on the blogosphere. Do you want to rely on the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, which have their biases, which have their corrupt journalists, but for the most part are relatively accurate and honest and wear their politics on their sleeve, and whose reporters are not anonymous, who are honest and blah, blah, blah? Or do you want a blogosphere where nothing is clear, where there are so many lies that it's impossible to actually distinguish who's doing the authoring, and where there are so many websites, there's so much chaotic information that for people unschooled, unseasoned in sorting their way through it, ultimately, the thing is just complete chaos and it'll just switch off and they won't learn anything at all. So I think the blogosphere is actually undermining media literacy by actually forcing people to ignore what's going on because we don't have the time or the energy or the knowledge to sort through it.
But if on the internet there is enough credible information and enough credible sites that over time have proven that they have reliable information that can be verified, it may seem.
Examples. Give me some examples.
Well, I think that there are news sites like Drudge Report that pull headlines from lots of different sources. He doesn't always get it right. I mean, but I think that over time, you have enough information that you can look at Drudge sometimes with a grain of salt, or you can do a little bit more research on your own, and you can follow up on other sources that you might trust more. But it's a good door into it's a snapshot of what's going on in the world, perhaps written a little bit more sensationalistically, which forces the reader to have to do a little bit more digging on their own. But we'll come back to this. Andrew Keen is our guest. He's the author of The Polemic Against the Internet, The Cult of the Amateur, How Today's Internet is Killing Our Culture. He wants to see more authority brought back to the internet. Possible? Where are you with that? We'll get your calls coming up next. It's Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. Well, the Audio Cafe made Andrew Keen an early entrepreneur on the internet, but now he sees it as the cult of the amateur, how today's internet is killing our culture. Top of the hour, Jim Mars on the North American Union. But Andrew Keen believes that there should be more authority on the internet. Where are you with that? We'll find out in just a second. I have an example for him of why I suspect that he's not right. Although I really enjoyed reading the book, I don't think it'll ever work. I'll tell you why, based on our experiences in the last couple of weeks on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Cult of the Amateur, How Today's Internet is Killing Our Culture. We'll get to all the calls coming up in just a second. All right, so, Andrew, I will just tell you right now, we had an interesting experience over the last, say, couple months on Coast to Coast, where we have a tape that was made by E. Howard Hunt, famous Watergate conspirator, and a guy who had been linked to the JFK assassination. And we have a tape in which he says, before he died, that he was involved in the conspiracy to kill a JFK. And he goes into detail as to who it was. They were all CIA related, although it was not a CIA operation. And a guy, he's a guy who's been called to testify in front of Congress, accused in front of Congress in trials that he was involved, had always denied it. Before he dies, he comes out and says, okay, yeah, I was. And I was fascinated by this tape. It's a great tape. We played it many times. I was told flat out by one of the major news networks that they wouldn't be running that because he implicates LBJ on the tape. And they have this news network has ties to the Johnson family. I was told by other people that because we ran it first as a business, they just didn't see the need to run it. There's other people, for whatever reason, have this tape and they're not running it. If it weren't for the internet and this show, but if it weren't for the internet, the story would have died. I mean, we keep talking about it, but the internet keeps that story alive, where the major mainstream news sources, they don't want anything to do with it.
Let me ask you this question. You know what? One of the most popular videos now on the internet is one called Loose Change. It's this video that says that the Bush administration was behind the 9/11 terrorist attack, that they flew the planes into the buildings. Do you believe that?
I don't believe everything that they put in. I haven't seen the video in a long time, and I'm not a believer in that particular theory, no. But what I am a believer in is that there are people who do have alternative information that doesn't make it into the mainstream media that has to have, that deserves a platform somewhere. It used to be that they could print a pamphlet and put it underneath a windshield, but you know, here they've got a little bit more of a megaphone for something which may be legitimate. And so maybe not that one, but others might be legitimate. So why not a platform for that?
But if you have a 10-year-old kid on the internet and it's just a media full of different conspiracy theories, some which are so absurd that they're almost laughable, how are the innocents, the kids, expected to know the difference between absurd conspiracy theory, lies, corrupt information, and truth?
Let's go to the phones. We have Jeff. He's in Nashville on Coast to Coast AM for Andrew Keen, The Cult of the Amateur, How Today's Internet is Killing Our Culture. Andrew, Jeff, go ahead.
Thanks, Ian. First, two things. One, I can answer his question real quick. As a former 10-year-old who was on the internet a while ago, and found some conspiracy theories and other information and whatnot, a confused 10-year-old is often going to go to the people he knows more, his parents. He's going to go to them. He's going to ask them questions of whether or not things or to not believe, and then he's going to find his own scope from there, his or her own scope. Secondly, how do you know, how are you so very sure with your vast knowledge of the Internet that there are no experts on the Internet? Using MySpace.com as an example, there are so many different experts on MySpace.com, on how MySpace.com works, on how to change a lot of different things to be able to fit your privacy part of your life. Everything about your life that you want to put on there or you don't want to put on there is up to you. It gives you a megaphone for what you believe in and what you don't believe in. But at the same time, you have that free speech with the help of your own personal experts that you have that are sometimes your friends, sometimes your Internet friends that you meet through MySpace, the people that you meet just out of the middle of nowhere.
All right. Let's give Andrew a chance to respond to that. Andrew?
Jeff, yeah, good points. I agree on the parents' front, and that's one of the messages in the book. We have responsibility as parents to supplement the way our kids are using the Internet. In terms of MySpace, I think one of the most shocking aspects of MySpace is the expertise in terms of posting photographs of teenagers half undressed. I'm not convinced that MySpace has a lot of expertise. But I also need to say that I'm not saying that there aren't experts on the Internet, and I value experts when they are on the Internet. So my book is in favor of more experts coming on the Internet and using their intelligence, their knowledge, and their training. I'm terrified by the idea of everyone becoming an amateur. So I'm all in favor of expertise, and this is a manifesto in favor of expertise.
All right, now how would somebody qualify as an expert on the Internet on your criteria?
My criteria, I think, is based on economics. I think that if you can make money as a journalist on the Internet, you're a professional. The reality is that a tiny proportion of the 70 million bloggers are making money. If you can make money as a filmmaker, you're a professional. But the majority of people aren't, which means that the amateurs are not able to really invest real time in their art, in their craft, in their trade. They're doing jobs during the day, so they're blogging at night, they're making movies at night, and generally that their information, their creative energy is not very good in comparison to people who are able to invest all their time and resources in it. So all right. Everyone starts as an amateur. You know, Einstein was at one point
patent
an amateur.
Clerk. Right. Patent clerk and laughed at.
No one's born a professional. You earn the right to become a professional by education, by training, and above all else, by being employed full-time in that occupation. So I trust a full-time professor more than I trust a kid to put entries into Wikipedia.
Well, I'll grant you that, but to use your Einstein example, he didn't become an authority right away. And in fact, it was only after he kept, as an amateur, kept stumping the professionals that he finally started to get credibility. But he was laughed at for years, and just that same criteria that he's an amateur, he's not getting paid for it, he's a patent clerk, what does he know, we're professors, we have PhDs, that kept him out. It sort of robbed the world of his genius for a long time. Let's get Sam on the wild card line. He's in Michigan for Andrew Keene, The Cult of the Amateur: How Today's Internet is Killing Our Culture. Or so he says. Sam, where are you with that?
Well, Ian, I'd love to hear David Talbot's response, Jim Maher's response, and if you ever can in the future, interview Noam Chomsky from MIT, whom I saw interviewed on Free Speech TV and a number of documentaries. Honestly, this man, my knee-jerk response, is he's a very cleverly crafted disinformation propagandist. He might even be one of those think tank organization agents, spin doctors, which is why I don't listen to any of the primetime daytime talk radio only programs like yours. And what's destroying our culture is a fascist government that lies about everything. And if he wants an affirmative relative to the government agents directing the 9/11 events, all he has to do is go to the 9/11 Warren Commission investigative report, where Norman Mineta presents his firsthand account in the bunker with the esteemed Vice President Cheney.
All right, well, I got to give him a chance to get back in here somewhere, Sam. But let me boil down the question this way from what Sam just said, Andrew, and that's this. What about 9/11? What is the role? I mean, you look at all of the official reasons why we were supposed to be behind the Iraq war, and the major news organizations were not challenging them. Why? Because there's money involved. And to go to your professional argument, that professional authoritative news media was really narrowing. And in many cases now they talk about with regret how in bed they were when they were embedded, and how they wish that they had been asking better questions earlier on of this administration. But financially, their hands were tied. So isn't that the opportunity for the internet, a source that doesn't have any money, a professional source, couldn't do what the internet was doing?
Couple of responses. Firstly, I agree to some extent. I don't think that the professional mainstream media did a great job in the early years of the war. On the other hand, if you were a critical reader, you could read The Nation, you could read The London Guardian, you could read The Washington Post from time to time, and you could find out a lot of the really truthful things that were going on. So it required some digging. It wasn't as if the whole media was blanketly telling lies about the war, and I don't think that mainstream media was consciously telling lies. But I think that now the media is actually very critical. So if what you're saying is true, what's changed? I mean, if they were in the pay somehow of corporations or the government, why are they now so critical of the war?
I don't think they were in the pay of the Post
and the Times doing such a great job exposing how badly the war's going and how badly it's being run.
And I would tell you that they were led by the polls. That when the polls changed, then the media changed with them. And suddenly, when the polls, the popularity of the president, when the popularity of the war started dropping, then the news media said, aha, here's more of an opportunity for us to do different type of stories. But all in all, it was led by the fear of being branded anti-American. That was where they were with that.
I think the fairest criticism of my book is I tend to idealize mainstream media. It's obviously not quite as perfect as I'm suggesting, and that's part of the polemic. I think that the problem with mainstream media is it itself gets seduced by the cult of the amateur. And that accounts for mainstream media's love affair with talking radio, with reality television, and with polling its readers or viewers so it tells them what they already know. So my book is, in a sense, a manifesto saying to mainstream media, you've got to be braver, you've got to tell the truth. Don't be in the pay of the amateur yourself.
Okay, I would say it's the cult of the advertising dollar that has more to do with that than anything. But let's go to wildcard line. Mike is in New Mexico. Andrew Keene's book, A Polemic Against the Internet. Mike, you're talking with Andrew Keene. Go ahead.
Hey, Ian. Thanks a lot there. Well, Andrew, I appreciate you admitting that it is a manifesto, which, of course, is a very negative connotation here in America. And no wonder why people are calling you a fascist. But in America, we have something called the First Amendment, and that First Amendment is free speech, amongst other things. And the reason why we have that is so people who are not professionals can have their voices heard. There is absolutely no qualification for free speech in America. You don't have to be an expert on anything. We can say what we want. And just from sound, I'm sorry to get personal, but you sound like you're an Englishman. And you can take that European one world government crap and go.
Come on. Let's not get personal. There's no reason to go there. But I think your first point was an interesting one. Andrew, how would you, before he got into the in your grill stuff, where are you with his first point?
I'm not against the First Amendment. I'm not saying, again, I'm not saying we close the thing down. But I think the thing that hasn't been said, which needs to be understood, is that Mainstream media is in structural crisis. Newspapers are laying off professional journalists by the droves. Television is experiencing its own massive crisis because people aren't watching the ads anymore. The record labels are in massive crisis. Even the Hollywood studios and the publishing houses are laying people off. So, you know, in an ideal world, of course, everybody would love to have blogs and newspapers and everything else. But if I had to choose between a professional newspaper and a blog, I'd choose a professional newspaper any time. And my book shows the fact that mainstream media is in crisis. And if we want a future in which there won't be professional news organizations, professional television news shows, professional newspapers, professional Hollywood studios and record labels, then continue to embrace the internet. Because in 25 or 50 years' time, we're not going to have a professional media. People stop paying for media. People continue to steal content online and embrace the amateur, fall under the spell of this cult.
Okay. I will tell you just real quickly, I wrote a... No, never mind.
Go on. I love the criticism. It's fun.
It's not a criticism, you. It's merely just a personal reflection. I wrote a piece that I sent to somebody on the internet, which got sent to somebody else, which got sent to about, three or 400 people. And it was just something I wrote. And somebody sent me a link to it on the internet, and they said, hey, look, somebody else is writing about what you were writing about. And I went to that website, which was a TV station in Philadelphia, and they had actually reprinted what I had written to a friend in an email about 3 weeks earlier, and they had printed it on their website. And you know what, Andrew? They copywrote it. They copied, copywritten my material to their website. They changed my lead. They stole about three quarters of what I wrote.
Well, that's inexcusable. I mean,
well, I'm just saying it's cut in both ways, and I wonder whether where the dotted line is anymore. Wildcard Line, George is in Connecticut for Andrew Keene, The Cult of the Amateur, How Today's Internet is Killing Our Culture. George?
Hello, Ian, and welcome to the weekend. So glad to hear you.
Nice to be back.
I want to start. I think the Times in New York, the Post, a lot of the other papers, the Wall Street Journal, just about the only thing they get right is the date and where they're published, because they're involved in a cult of professional lying. They have the contacts, not directly where the story should lead with the truth, but the story where it's the most commercial profit for them. And as for the record labels, what you're talking about, the reason why record labels are in trouble is because they've made a habit through their whole history of stealing from artists and stealing from the people they sell to. They started out selling CDs for $18. They ended up making them for 20 cents each, but they're still charging $18 for them. Even somebody who's rudimentarily dull would know that they're making a huge profit. And the development cost they were talking about, they amortized that way off in these CDs. And they said, hey, you know what? We'll keep the profit. And people discovered it. The iPod came along. It's moving away from them. And they deserve it.
I have to agree with them on the record industry. But, Andrew, you know this too, because, I mean, you were doing, you know, the internet record business. I know so many guys in bands, and they'll tell you that there is no bigger ripoff artist out there than these record labels. And in a way, the chickens are kind of coming home to roost for them.
Yeah, but the casualty is less professional music, fewer CD sales, high quality. And what the music labels are very good at is sales and marketing. They're very good at developing bands and distinguishing talent from and distinguishing high quality talent. I mean, we wouldn't have had most of the great acts of the last 30 years without the record industry. So again, it's easy to use these sort of authoritative structures as punch bags, whether it's you know, slagging off the newspapers or the record labels. But the alternative is the internet. It's chaos. It's an unmonetized and unmonetizable information and entertainment economy, where nothing's any good, where half the stuff's ripped off, and where talk about artists, no one's making any money on the internet as a musician. It may not have been ideal in the pre-internet age, but it's a lot better for a musician then than it is now when no one's making any money.
You know, you may be right on that point, but I know a lot of artists that weren't making any money off their record labels. They were making all their money on concert appearances, and the record labels have now been eating into that, saying, no, no, now you got to give us a piece of your concert business, too. Let's get to, I think we have time for Susan, east of the Rockies. She's in Jacksonville, Florida.
I hope someone's going to say something in favor of me.
I don't know. Find out. Susan, you get the last crack at it. We only have a few seconds, so go ahead.
Well, I'm here to say I agree with Mr. Kane.
How about that?
Great.
You got
How
one.
How about that? And you're a Pippin, and I say, God save the Queen. And I'm here to say something a little off the subject, but it is in line, and it may be a thing for a new book for you. I will admit this, I am an amateur. I'm also blind. And my question for you, Mr. Keene, is, and I'm a thespian, so I've
got to be quick.
English roles. My question for you is this. We're in medieval times in the blind world and in the disabled world, in the internet. And what would you say to...
Gotta go. We're out of time. I told you. I'm sorry.
Okay,
we just
all
had...
I'm going to ask is internet programs. How can we upgrade our internet programs?
Well, there you go. You have to email the rest to him and get the answer from there. The Cult of the Amateur, Andrew Keene, Jim Mars coming up next. It's Coast to Coast AM.